Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ben Roy Taylor.
Video games.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Chaps, we are playing through a hell of a lot of stuff at the minute. I think we're all trying to juggle as many games as possible, mainly because the state of the world means that you might as well stay inside and just play whatever comes your way. So as of midnight last night, I've been getting through Crash 4, I've been getting through Star Wars Squadrons, and there's also the Mafia Definitive Collection, which also Josh has been playing. Ben Roy, you've just finished Final Fantasy VII. We've got the Mario Collection going on. Josh as well, you've got God of War, and at the end of all that is Hades. So we're going to try and get through everything. We probably won't, but you never know. But I thought we'd talk a little bit about Crash 4 because, Ben Roy, we played the beta thing a couple of weeks ago, whenever that was, in this weird time reality. And the main game is absolutely brilliant. We're not going to sort of talk about it too much other than just general impressions. But having played it at midnight, I put about half an hour, 40-ish minutes into it. And I don't know if either of you were looking forward to the state of the animations in it, but in terms of the way that the cutscenes are presented, they've got this whole... It just feels like an animated show. I absolutely love the way it's put together. But I don't, like I said, I don't know if how excited either of you were. This is almost potentially one of my most game of the year, most excitable things that I was going into it.
I know you've been playing the demo and you've been absolutely loving that as well.
I just get that quickly. I was skeptical when I first saw it announced. I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then I saw that things look a bit different. And secretly on my own, I was like, oh, everything looks a bit different. I don't know if I like this.
In the character models and stuff.
Yeah, character models. And I think the voices are pretty much all the same.
Yeah, voice actor is definitely the same, yeah.
But then going into it, playing the demo, I was flipped straight away. When I was sold. It felt like a legit sequel to Crash. Mm. It was hard. It played like the others did, but there wasn't this all weird thing that we had with, was it Crash 1, where you'd slide off some sort of objects. It felt smoother.
Yes.
And even though it was a hefty price of 50 English pounds that I found it on somewhere, I bought my copy. I'm ready to play it all weekend. I can't wait. I think Crash 4, I think this is one of the most surprising, yet probably biggest sequels you're going to have in a while, like where it's just going to be more of what we want without any of the nonsense, basically.
I will say that having watched Activision do the Insane trilogy, then they did the Reignited trilogy, then we had Crash Team Racing, and it was has this all been building to actual forward momentum? Because they were really good, retro nostalgic packages, and Tony Hawk's is brilliant. But with Tony Hawk's, they brought in a few elements from the later games to spruce up the older levels, and like it was that whole thing of like, okay, you have access to all these IPs, what are you guys going to do going forward? And Crash 4 feels like they learned every lesson possible from the original trilogy and have modernized it and made it feel fresh. And I love the redesigns of the characters. I love every frame of everything that Crash does, I think is hilarious. Even his idle animation where he's just like bopping his crotch in every direction. I just love that. It's brilliant. And like I said, all the cutscenes are great and everything, but the way that it plays, Josh, I know that you're an old school Crash fan because one of the options that this has is, I think they call it modern, it's either modern or retro approach to lives in the game, where there's now in Crash, thankfully, thank the Lord, there's checkpoints everywhere so that when you die and you don't have to go all the way back to the start, obviously there was the checkpoint boxes you could hit, but when you run out of enough lives, you went back to the beginning of the whole level. Not anymore. If you don't want it, the new setting counts up your lives, the amount of deaths that you've had, and that just goes towards one of your totals, which results in different gems being unlocked and stuff. But you told me that you weren't going to use that because you want retro Crash.
Yeah, I want retro Crash. If it's going to be Crash 4, I want a continuation of Crash Warped. You know what I mean? I want all of those old mechanics, all of those foundations to still be there for me personally, just because when I think of Crash, even like Wrath of Cortex and stuff, I like the live system. I like the more retro you know, structure of it, like the name suggests. So I will be trying to play it in that style. I hope they've done it well, because, you know, they might have just thrown it in as an afterthought. The game might not necessarily be built or tailored towards that old school brand of playing. But even if I do have to suck it up and play on the more modern modes, I'm still looking forward to it, man. Like, we've talked about this game before, all three of us. You know what I mean? We're all big Crash fans. We've been looking forward to it. I'm sadly not going to get to play it yet because I've got too many games that are currently just in progress that I need to finish off first, but I'm looking forward to getting around to it, because it feels like a proper, I mean, it sounds dumb to say it feels like a proper robust sequel, but I mean, in terms of content, like, it seems like there's so much there, from the levels to the way you can replay the levels to the time trial to the multiplayer. You know, a lot of people have been kind of quibbling. I know, Benroy, you just said there about it being like full price, but to me, the content inside it feels like it's going to be.
I did react to it being £60, yeah.
I don't know. Again, this is for me as an outsider. I might play it and kind of completely disagree, but I'm looking forward to jumping in, and I hope that amount of content and everything in there like justifies that price. And I hope, hopefully, that it's good enough that it leads us on to sequels to Spyro, to Tony Hawk's, all of the other remakes that Activision has been working on.
I will totally say that the personality is there. Like, that sort of like irreverent Naughty Dog humor that I thought they started to add in quite nicely in Crash Team Racing, like with different background animations and different random, like, humans shooting each other in the background or something while you're trying to go around the Aztec circuit or whatever. Little things that I feel like Naughty Dog would have done that I feel like are all over this. There's so much background detail and little jokes and stuff like that that really stands out.
Could I ask one more? Just, I don't know if it's a spoiler or anything, but because you started from the beginning, you've played more than a demo now. Do you have the double jump straight away?
Yes.
Because that just felt weird to have it without earning it in the demo. I don't know why. It just felt weird to have it, but I guess I'm down to have it straight away.
It makes me curious what they've done going forward, because the whole story is like, you know, Entropy and Uka Uka.
I love Entropy as well.
The animation's so good. He's so menacing with his giant evil smile. But yeah, they refuse to stay in the weird realm they've been put into in Crash 3. So there's a lot of, obviously, abilities based around these new masks that get unearthed and stuff. And I'm curious what the unlocks are going to be, because I remember in Crash 3 getting the one per bazooka and thinking that was the coolest
thing
ever.
The super spin sort of thing.
And the super spin,
sort of fly, yeah.
And so, like, there's things like that where I'm like, are all the upgrades going to be through the masks, or are we going to get some more stuff for Crash? But that's the thing with having, like, the you know, like the double jump or whatever, makes it feel like a continuation of where we left off in Crash 3. But yeah, it's just, so far, absolutely loving it. I've only played it for about half an hour, 40-ish minutes, but it's so Moorish, and it was like 2 a.m. I was like, I need to play a bit of Squadrons, so I'll do something else. But it's very, very good. The next game down that we've got is Final Fantasy VII. Now, Mr. Benroy, you just finished this. The Final Fantasy VII remake, rather. And Josh, I know you finished it back near a launch, but for both of you, it's your first experience of Final Fantasy VII. So I kind of just want to see what both of you think. Josh, I know you deleted it straight away, but Benroy, you are a bigger fan, I think.
Yeah, I want to hear Josh's story about deleting it first, though.
Right, okay. That sets it up to be like, I was really disappointed. I wasn't disappointed.
It's fair.
I was just done with it, you know what I mean? I didn't want to go back through it. I didn't want to go back and get any of the secrets that I missed. I really enjoyed the story. I really loved a lot of it. I loved the characters, loved the world, loved the presentation. But it pissed me off too many times, man, towards the end. Towards the end, that thing just wastes your time and treats you like an idiot. And I thought, you know what? I can put up with that on the first run through to enjoy the story. But any lingering memories of seeing it on my UI, I was like, nah, I don't need this in my life anymore.
It's right near the end. I forget the exact chapter number, but it's the one when everything's about to kick off, you're running up, you're about to do the big final battle, and we might get into spoilers in a bit. But and then all of a sudden, Cloud just falls off a walkway, and it's like, oh, you've got, there's a whole other game down here. You've got to get back up to where you were. And it's like, that felt like some of the most egregious padding in arguably gaming history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird because I did the thing, like, I don't know, the other stairs, a spoiler, I did the stairs or the lift, like the bits stairs. Like that. I went up the 60,000 flights of stairs.
Oh, I take a spoiler. I mean, we might as well just have a full on, like, you know, spoiler zone. So yeah, go for it.
There are some bits that was like, you just get to be like, boss gauntlet, do I really need to fight Abzu again? Do I really need to do this? When you get to be like, everyone's like, do you want to sort some chocobo routes? No, I don't. I'm going to go. And I'm glad I just ignore those people in that last bit of the side quest, because it just got, that stuff just got boring towards the end. But playing the actual main game and getting into it and meeting Skullface, aka the president in this game, I can't believe they use Skullface's voice actor. He's so cool. And then just seeing all that stuff going down and then going and absorbing, finding out how things have changed. There was some, but then like I have to complain that some of the fights just I don't know why they just get angry. Like, oh, do I have to fight man with dog and then only with cloud and then sort my life out quickly?
Man with dog.
Yeah, and
why didn't you like man with dog? Because I mean, I know he's out of.
I think it's just like, why are we splitting everyone up for 10 minutes just so I can have this little fight sort of thing?
Iconic, mate.
I mean, but he's not even in that part of the game, as I've seen through looking at. So it's not iconic.
Rufus is entirely iconic. That fight is totally in the first game.
I thought that fight was moved up ahead, though. I thought that fight wasn't outside the president's window.
No, you always fought Rufus on the rooftop.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, fighting those wisps towards the end, and then the camera keeps... This is one of the biggest complaints, is when the camera kept panning up, and I was about to do a special move, and then I'd already done it. Either Cloud would lose his meter about to do his one of his moves, or I would just miss because people had moved out the way by the time it came back. That happened so many times.
That's in the final fight when you go up against what is ostensibly destiny itself, this weird sort of Kingdom Hearts boss thing where you're fighting for your own purpose, which is very Tetsuya Nomura.
And then you die on one of them and you've got to do that all again. I was like, oh my.
Did you die?
I don't know, because when they morph into the bird thing and then they do the big suplex power slam to everyone, I'm just like, well, I didn't realize you could do that, mate. And no one had
black on me too, man.
And so, oh god.
Ed, and so I've got to do it all again. And the amount of swearing I was doing towards the end, like, there were just certain bits like that that were just like, do we need to do this?
The thing is, that fight goes on for like 45 minutes. Yeah. Like, I remember getting through, that was on the night before the embargo, and I was like, I'm either going to keep playing and finish this so I can do the review in the morning, or I'm going to go to bed. And it was 4 a.m, and I was doing that final fight, and I was like, if I lose this, it might be all over. My entire career, just hang it up, I'm done.
And then Sephiroth afterwards as well. It's like,
oh. Yes. It's just ludicrous. And then, yeah, like you said, you still go up against Sephiroth and you have to do that whole big fight. Josh, Josh, what did you think of the way that they handled the end stuff? Did that seem, that stuff just seem so baffling? Because I think it's made for original fans.
There were a lot of moments in the game that we could tell it was made for original fans, you know what I mean? Like the dog fella, whose name I have forgotten even though we've just mentioned it. Like,
yeah, catchy. I thought,
Sorry,
no, you mean the Rufus thing. I was thinking of when randomly Ketchy turns up, but yeah.
But when Rufus turns up and I'm kind of like, I understand why you're here because this obviously means a lot to other people, but in the context of the story you're telling, as a newcomer, that doesn't resonate at all with me. You're just this brand new character you've thrown in at the last minute that I'm supposed to connect with, and I didn't. But the actual ending itself really did resonate because, you know, even though I know a lot about Final Fantasy VII through osmosis, you know, a lot of the main beats I knew going into it just because of the industry we work in, the games where the friends we have and stuff like that, I still could understand enough of what they were doing with the ending to get that it was a big deal. And I do think they sold it in terms of, you know, like the presentation, in terms of the way it's presented, in terms of the performances, in terms of even like the writing, they managed to nail that this was like a seismic universe changing event, that even when it shows the ramifications of it, it cuts to characters who you should only know because you have played the original game or you like Final Fantasy.
Yeah, that
worked for me still, even right. That was the one time where I was like, right, I understand what they're doing. That is still meaningful because they are such cultural touchstones in what they're changing and what they're altering. I can get it even as an outsider, even if I don't obviously appreciate it as fully as someone who is a huge fan. I could still appreciate it and get on board. And ultimately that ending, and I don't know how the rest of the Final Fantasy fans enjoy that ending, but for me, I was like, right, this is something new. This is something I get into. Not only does it make me excited for the future of this franchise and this remake, it also makes me fascinated about the original to go back and go through the original and see what's different, to see how they've bolted it, to see that legacy become part of the modern narrative.
Well, I mean, I opened the review saying you should only play this if you've played the original, and I still stand by that. I could not believe what they did in the ending. The character you're referring to, who is fundamental to everything, one of the biggest twists in the whole game, that stuff was just ludicrous.
Can I just say, after diving into, as much as I ragged on this, I absolutely loved my time with it and I really enjoyed it. It was like, again, with just like a lot of the moments landed for me in this game, which I wasn't ever expecting. And I, towards the end, I was like, you know what? I could do like another 100 hours of these characters. Like, let's go. But
that's good.
like it was weird because quickly to the complaint and to the good stuff, but when the fights at the end, I felt it became like attack, struggle as hell to try and get away and just get that healing, attack, and that's what the sort of like it fell into. Maybe I'm just crap, but I just fell into a rhythm where I was sort of like barely holding on sometimes and just trying to shove health into someone while trying to dodge.
Oh, it's like you're dangling through that entire last fight.
Big swipe. But having a reasonable idea of how things are meant to end, I'm totally here for like this, for Sephiroth going through like time and dimensions and breaking stuff down and getting revenge, but like, nah, I'm not dead yet. And then this whole game spurring off into like another dimension where it like so it reshapes the timeline. Mm-hmm. I think it was Jason Schreier who said, like, I'm totally here for Final Fantasy VII Remake to be the name of this one. Right. And Final Fantasy VII, something else to be the name of the next one, like Retribution or something like that, or Redemption, where the next ones aren't really remaking, then they just totally like splinter off into this. Because I just love shattered time and dimensions of like, you give me that sort of stuff and try explain it just with a little bit, then I'm totally here. I'm gonna lap it all up. I'm gonna buy this game day one, and now I'm a Final Fantasies man.
Good. You should go play the other Final Fantasies mans because they're all really good. But I think that's one thing that I adored about it as well is that it validates the original and says like, okay, we're going to go over here. And that is so confusing the way that they do it. But I think there's enough there to sort of pick apart. But that's why I think you need both. And hopefully that was always intentional on their part that they're going to sort of encourage you to go seek out the original one and see how that goes. The next game down, Josh, you wrote down Outer Wilds, which me and Benoit both could not connect with, or at least I know I definitely couldn't over time. But I did try a lot. You are absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it hurts to know that you two couldn't get into it as much as I did because I didn't expect to get into it. I was just looking for something to play. Like you said, we've just been devouring these games and I was looking at what's on sale in the store. And I was actually going to buy the Surge 2 and I messaged you saying, Scott, which should I get the Surge 2 or the Outer Wilds? And you were like, I didn't gel with the Outer Wilds and I don't know why that made me
classic
buy it
you
more.
Fashion, you did the opposite thing I said.
No, because I'm sure you said it's the kind of wanky thing that I would like, so I thought that's a good recommendation.
Because if you want like the game equivalent of the pie scene from Ghost Story, then it's kind of like go find your own purpose. Like, yeah, that's Outer Wilds.
A little bit, yeah. So I kind of went into this not really knowing much about it. I knew the kind of the general idea of like you're in this 22-minute sort of loop and you're going off to explore and it's about like a solar system and it all works scientifically or whatever. But that's pretty much the be all and end all. And I didn't know if it was going to gel and I couldn't believe how much it gelled. Like it became instantly one of my favorite gaming experiences that I've ever had, which I did not expect going into it. And I just couldn't stop playing it. I was at work and I was thinking about what I was going to do on the night. I was thinking about where I was going to go, what I was going to do, how I was going to apply the knowledge that I learned. And it's because it's not just, I think, a technical marvel, the fact that this solar system works and you're literally kind of having to wrestle with the physics to, you know, you're tangling with actual gravity of these planets to sort of fling you around the solar system and stuff. You need to get to grips with that. But I really connected with like the central mystery and the central story, like uncovering why you are where you are and what is going on and what's your place in this kind of cosmos. I just thought that was excellent. And the fact that you don't only really have... No, I love the fact that everything that you have at the beginning of the game is all you have at the end of the game. And it's just what you learn on your journey in the context that you get for where you are and what you can do that changes. You don't get like a double jump. You don't get like the ability to teleport or anything like that. Every puzzle that you get at the start of the game, you could do then if you just had the knowledge or understanding. And I just thought that was so smart to make you appreciate like every little thing that you kind of encountered, and it blew me away, boys. But I know that you two didn't quite have the same experience, which I think everyone... is
fair. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I was going to say that thing you just said about like everything at the end is you could have done it from the beginning. You just didn't know yet. That's what I adored about The Witness. And I know some people bounce off The Witness, but like, yeah, Benroy, how did you find Outer Wilds? Because me and Josh, I've exclaimed a lot of things about Outer Wilds, but what were your thoughts on it?
It's been so long ago now, I can't even remember my own takes and I still have it downloaded. But the thing is, I think along with like, say, Ori, Will and the Wisps, I'm going to jump on it again when I get my Series S, when I've got a controller that doesn't have drift forward, for example, that you're constantly battling against, trying to...
Which would be disastrous in Outer Wilds.
Yeah, I mean, it only really works for Gears because you're literally in combat sort of thing. But I can't remember my ticks. I just remember in the busy season, I felt like we had the end of last year. I just didn't feel like I had time for it. And I played it once or twice and the gimmick didn't stick me that time, so I just decided to put it down.
My thing was that the thing that like I should love about Outer Wilds is what I adore about No Man's Sky, which is just pick a direction, go and see what you find, and that'll always be meaningful, and everything flows into everything else. But I did, I don't know how many runs, like 9-10 different runs in that game where you take off and you fly in a direction, you try and find something, and then because the universe resets every 20 minutes, I would just be in the middle of something, or I'd be forever up against that timer, and I was always in a state of anxiety the whole time. I just couldn't get into that flow whatsoever, where I was just sort of like, am I doing this wrong? Oh, I bounced off this thing. Oh, well, I guess that's a run wasted. Then I'll just restart. And then like, just, I just could not get that game at all. And you did say that, like, you know, you want to obviously keep checking the logs, which will tell you where to go and stuff like that. And I did find some characters and it was cool sitting playing guitar with the asteroid, with the underwater looking Bioshock man next to his campfire. Mm-hmm. That stuff was cool. But the things that you've said are what people who love Outer Wilds have all said. And I wish I could get that. I wish I had that, but I just kept literally bouncing off every planet and bouncing off the whole game. But
I think it is fair, like, especially going into it, you know, like you feel like rudderless in a way, even though it gives you a few pointers. It's very abstract in what you can do. And because it's an entire universe, like, it feels entirely overwhelming and almost unconquerable, because you're like, you go to these planets, you don't know how they work, you're getting killed, you have to get back out, you're wrestling with the ship because your ship is like made of wood and you can't land it anywhere because you get shot off and the gravity's pulling you towards the sun and you're getting murdered. But I could totally see how that would like put people off. But for me, that was like, it became a reward and learning process to have everything stacked against you and then figure out ways to make this entire solar system feel small and feel like you've properly conquered it and properly come like a long way. There was something to that, that once I got over that initial hurdle of, right, I'll just give myself a goal. I'm going to go to this planet every single time. I'm going to just figure it out. I'm going to get the layout down. Once I started like sort of giving myself my own objectives in a way, even though there are objectives in the game, but you know, things to kind of get a reward from the end of it, like just to map out a certain route or to understand how to land your ship or something in these small increments, because they do all sort of inform each other. It became this kind of snowball effect where everything started informing each other and it just became like this rewarding thing. So I'd want to implore you both to try it again, and I hope you like it, but I don't know anymore. On the new system?
I mean, I guess on
that's
the...
That's what I had to say, sorry.
Well, the thing is, with anything like... Because I've still got it installed as well. So I'm like, it's always there. It's always something that I can get back around to. But yeah, I don't know. I wish I had the sensations that you had, and maybe someday I will. The next one down we've got written is the Mario Collection, the 3D All-Star stuff, which I know, Benroy, you've been playing recently. That stuff, how have you found it?
Basically,
£35.
I'm glad I spent £50 and 64 because I'm a slave, as I've said before, to Nintendo, and I'm just going to do it forever. But I will say, playing that, especially getting to the later levels, I can't remember what the volcano one is called, But when you go, like, some of the camera controls have really started to, like, actually grind into me to the point where I've been swearing. Like I did towards the end of Final Fantasy.
Why did they not map just full 3D controls to an analog stick? Why didn't they do it in chunks?
Why didn't they do anything to this apart from export a ROM sort of thing? Like, I mean, it's still Mario 64. It still plays great. It's still revolutionary. But some things like the controls or climbing up a pole and then trying to jump off, but then as you're moving forward, Mario turns a bit and then, you're down the bottom of the volcano again. Bye. Certain things like that. Or it just, like, when you... I know this was in the original game as well, but there's like one style when you have to, in the very first level, shoot out of a cannon and keep hitting coins as you go along. But coins don't render in until it's too late. So you go in there, you're shooting across the map, you're missing a coin and you go all the way back. Little things like that where it's like just controls, camera and certain things like things rendering in a bit too late all feel like they should all be there in this remake or whatever the heck, this re-plop. I'm going to call it a re-plop because they plopped it out.
Well, the thing is, like, I don't think this is a good way to play Mario 64. I just think that, like, having literally got... I got my N64 last year for my 30th. and I got Mario 64 then as well. And I still think that game was absolutely gorgeous. I had a really great time with it. It flows so well. I love the way that it played. I love the feel of Mario in motion and the momentum and everything else. And then going to this one and having that fresh, you know, comparison, I think this is a far worse version of it. And it's hard to pin it down, but I think it feels better on the N64 controller. And I think the movements just feel, I don't know, it's hard to pin it down. Maybe that I remember watching some tech breakdown of the specifics of how it runs, and it can be the slightest change in frame rates or frame rate dips or something like that. And it's just that it's all in controller feel and the feel of the game, and the N64 one just seems to still be the definitive one. But I mean, still, at least it is a package of Sunshine, Galaxy, and 64. But I feel like we're wrestling with our own love of Mario to enjoy it, because it's really not, they should have done so much more with it. The camera work should have been the least thing they did.
£50 and limited time only, and only the three games and not the fourth one. There are so many caveats to this. Like, if you've got no way and you don't want to break the law by downloading a ROM, then yes, play this, because you shouldn't break the law. But at the same time, it's like they have done the bare minimum, probably not enough to justify the price, but still, soon as that came up at the end of the direct, I got that fear. I was like,
well, that was the thing.
I need this. My N64 is somewhere in here, and I don't even know where my character, my copy of Mario, I think, is hundreds of miles away for some reason. I've got Glover there, but not Mario. I don't know. It's because you said about the controls. I couldn't work out how to do a bum slam for ages. I had to go into the control like options and find out, because I just couldn't work it out, and I felt so silly for not being able to just play with the controller and not work that out myself. I don't know, that is silly as well, but something about it just doesn't feel right. But
yeah,
I mean, it's got that misty, like, oh, it's Mario.
Well, that's the thing. Like you said, as soon as it popped up, it was like, oh my God, they're actually going to do it. Like, oh, Mario 64 and Sunshine and Galaxy. And like, obviously with Galaxy especially, we did just throw money at the screen. And I think that that's it's a hell of a thing, but it is just sheer brand power or individual game power. Josh, as a someone who hasn't played Mario 64, does this collection at all bring you in?
Yes, it does. It was immediately on my radar, because I've only ever dabbled very little in all of those games that are on sale. And obviously people love them, especially, you know, Galaxy and 64. Obviously, they're the two I hear the most about. So this was very appealing to me. But then it was £50.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know if I can justify that right now when there are all these other games like The Outer Wilds that are quite cheaper. So I'm going to get around to it eventually. I'm really looking forward to it, to be fair, just because I feel like it might be better for someone like me who doesn't have that prior experience and just wants to experience them in some way.
The thing is, I don't know if, Ben Roy, would you agree this is the best way to play Mario? I would almost discourage people from playing 64 this way, because it's got such a reputation, and this version is not going to do it.
I think it's weird because, like, deep down I want to say no, but I'm just going to say yes because of, like, how easily available it is, how you can just get on the Switch, and how Josh could play it while your partner's watching TV or doing something else, and you can have it on the Switch there. Because I've not really tried it handheld yet. I've only played it on the TV, but like I keep trying to, like, I should play this in bed or something. It's going to be like a Christmas game where when I venture out into the apocalypse, when I sort of like, I camp out several days to get down south sort of thing. I'm going to be playing it sort of thingy.
That's exactly, you hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly what I decided to wait for, because I was going to get it right now. And I thought, no, I always get like a big Nintendo game at Christmas. I feel like 2 years ago, it was Breath of the Wild. Last year, it was Mario Odyssey. So I'm just waiting for this moment where I've got a few weeks off work. And I'm hopefully going to be back visiting my parents, you know, touch wood. And then hopefully I get to play through like these stellar games, just like back to back and like, just love giving it a go in bed or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Nintendo magic works best at birthdays and Christmas. So like that's lush. And Mario 64 soundtrack is gorgeous as well.
I'm gonna skip Sunshine and play 64, then go straight to Galaxy, then go with Sunshine because Sunshine's
not good.
If you want a cleaning simulator with bad camera controls
and bad movement and every level design, just it's I didn't play Sunshine until I did it in this collection. And all the people who said that was a bad Mario game, I know the people who said that was a bad Mario game, 100% with them, it's really bad. We should end on Mafia Definitive Edition. Only, I think only me and Josh have gone through this. I don't know if you played the old version, Ben Roy, the original Mafia games.
Looks like cheap Godfather.
That was my thing, yeah. Back in the day, I was like, oh, this looks like chunky Godfather. But yeah, me and Josh are both playing through the Definitive Edition, which I think visually like feels like it's up there with Shadow of the Colossus, like one of the best looking games on the current gen. I've just finished it last night. Josh, how far have you managed to get?
I haven't played it the past couple of nights because it's become my game that I put on at about 10 o'clock before bed and like do a few missions of, and I've been a bit too busy. So I would guess about halfway through, I think going off like the mission log, I think there's 20 missions. I'm about 10 or 11 in, I'd say, maybe a bit more. So I've still got a ways to go in terms of, you know, story content at least.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I finished it last night and I thought that, like, I love the general setup of the story and everything. I thought it was a bit rushed towards the end. But watching some comparisons, they have done a lot more with, like, re-recording dialogue and making sure that different character points come across and things like that. I would still totally recommend it, even though I did say F this out loud to pretty much every action set piece in there, because it still plays like a 2002. And it's just not built for like those big over the top bits where you're chasing down a plane or you're doing whatever. And that stuff starts to feel really awkward. As a super quick wrap up, I will mention that I played a little bit of Squadrons last night. That game, the Star Wars Squadrons, is in first person only. Ben Roy's coffee. He'll be getting to it over the weekend. And we'll have a video on Monday. I think Ben Roy and Ewan are going to get on it. That game is solid as hell. It's very much the spiritual sequel to Jedi Starfighter. Although it's first person only, which is such a bugbear. But I know that they clarified that months ago. But it does almost force you into a really cool space though, where it's like it is a first person shooter in space. And there's lots of manual controls for the ships, like throttle control, and you're rerouting power towards blasters or towards the engines, whether you want to get a speed boost and stuff like that. Some really cool ideas and something I didn't expect at all from EA. So that stuff is cool. Ben Roy, you wanted to quickly mention Spelunky.
So Spelunky is a game that it's a roguelike. It was super hard and I never really got good at it. I spent most of my time watching people playing it. Like one Patrick Klepik, I would just sit there and watching for hours playing it because I just couldn't ever get as far as him. I couldn't even get to OMAC. This one, I've been popping on some audiobooks, popping on some podcasts, sitting down, just playing it, you know, just like in between that time, just after like between like dinner and sort of things, and just getting through. And it's just, I've done a lot better in this one. I don't know what it is. I think it's the addition of new enemies and just I feel like they've tweaked it a bit. It just was more responsive to me and just everything about that. I've managed to get to the end a few times. Well, one of the endings, this, I don't know if you know about Spelunky, but it's got like three or four different secret other endings in different worlds you have to breach through to. But just getting towards the end and fighting the boss and only dying because it's me making a stupid mistake rather than me getting squished by the giant big head that just wants to crush you. I've just been really enjoying it. I've been really enjoying something that's just not really any story. You're just playing. You're playing Spelunky Man's daughter, and now you're doing. You're following his journeys as his daughter. You're just going through, and just going through some caves, and it's random each time. And then sometimes the slave man that you get every now and then might go and rob the shop, cause the shopkeeper to start destroying the level, and then you get bad.
that's all you need for the back of the box quote. I will say that in the space of roguelikes, Hades is the thing that I've been doing the same thing on, where it's just doing run after run after run. And I will totally champion Hades. Like I think we just did a video today, it'll be on the channel, for which one thing will make you give up on a game forever. And I have such a thing with roguelikes where I think that because you are losing, you're quote unquote losing progress, you need to rerun it again with a different build and see how far you can get and whatever, that stuff does weigh on me. And eventually I gave up on Dead Cells because I got to the final boss multiple times. and just kept dying.
I will say
Hades is great though.
With Spelunky, like, you can do the classic sort of thing, like, I think you could do this the first one, where you just try and play through the whole thing. But this one has divergent paths, so you don't always have to go through jungle anymore. You can go through sort of, like, robotic sort of, like, lava caves, which is so much harder. I wouldn't recommend it first time around. Yeah. And if you go through, get past the first four levels out of the caves, you can eventually... You did it a few times. You can pay this woman to sort of unlock a shortcut for you. So what I've been doing is I've now unlocked the shortcut after playing it so much, and I just jumped straight into the jungle, and then just been working on that and just really getting used to the how that sort of biome works towards the other one, just getting into it. And that's helped me, like, just be more into Spelunky, me playing it more. And I feel like even though it's a roguelike where you die and you lose everything, you can have this sort of semi option to have a bit of progression, which I feel really works with this one.
It's always that balance of, like, does it feel like you just wasted your time, or is there something carrying forward? And, like, yeah, I didn't think, for me, I love Dead Cells feel, but I didn't think it balanced that side of it that well. But Hades has a whole story that only works with resetting. You're going back to the same location, talking to different characters, and that stuff changes over time. But yeah, we might end up doing another What We Playing podcast, depending on what news breaks across the week and what other things happen. So for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Farewell.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye. See ya.
Later.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.